Adelaide Plains Chapter and Verse Group News. It's me, Carolyn, and we've got
Jeanette
and
Marie
and Michelle.
Beautiful. And we're all ready. And our news, well, we've got COVID-related things and things cancelled and things postponed and who knows really what the news is.
Yes.
But we had the privilege of having a wonderful website thing, a forum, so we were able to have our Thursday group meetings via a forum. So all in our comfortable homes, away from anything nasty.
Except for family members stressing and carrying on.
I've got a husband and a dog, I'm okay. And that went well, but now it's really good to be actually in the same room as each other.
It is.
Even though we really have more than 9 people in our group, so we've got exactly the right number in our group, so we can go in the room that we go to, and that all works beautifully well. So,
I do have literary news.
I guess we've also got a little bit of news around that we are still going full steam ahead for the Writers Festival for next year.
We are, certainly, yes.
We have...
I mean, recovery is just this perfect theme.
It is. We've booked in Sharon Curnow and at this stage, hopefully, Rebecca Sullivan. I haven't heard back from her, but we have from Sharon and it's very exciting. So we're just going to plan it as if in a post-COVID world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Right, so news and a few things happening of interest. So this is an obscure one. A 15th century medieval manuscript, which is considered to be one of the greatest books of Ireland, has been returned to Ireland after being captured in a siege 400 years ago.
Wow.
That reminds me, I've got a library book I have to take.
Did you take it captured in a siege, Michelle? So it's called The Book of Lismore and it's been donated to University College Cork. Costa Book Awards, Susanna Clarke has been nominated for a second novel after a 16-year wait. She wrote Jonathan Strange, Mr. Noel, which was a bestseller back in early 2000s. The travel writer Jan Moss passed away.
That was sad.
Yes. So she was 94 and died in Wales. Wally Soyinka has publishing his first novel in almost 50 years called Chronicles of the Happiest People on Earth. He's 86 years old.
Procrastination.
Well, you're happy if you don't have to achieve anything. Just go on.
Use his time in lockdown to write another novel.
That's good advice to all of us.
Douglas Stewart won the Booker Prize for his debut novel, Shuggy Bane. He's a Scottish-American writer, and it's about his growing up in Glasgow.
It's probably Shuggy Bay, not Shuggy Bay. You would say Shaggy. Shuggy.
No, it's
I don't know. I'm just being silly.
I don't know my Glasgow accent very well. And Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie was voted the Women's Prize winner of winners for her novel Half of a Yellow Sun.
I've heard good things about that.
Seven, and it's named the best book in the prize's 25-year history. I think that's been adapted into a movie as well. So, and that's my news for this month. So, a few interesting items, and I apologise if I mispronounced any titles or names there.
We're ignorant
or
Anglo
and locations.
People. Australian. Some of us are.
Monolingual Australian, I'm afraid. So we'll move on to the discussion, and this month's was crime and conflict. So if Marie wants to start reading the titles on the list.
Okay, American Tabloid by James Elroy.
American War by Omar El Akkad.
Ice Candy Man by Bapsi Sidhwa.
I've got the easy one here, Rebecca by Daphne Du Maurier.
Regeneration by Pat Barker.
The Children of Men, Peter James.
The Hound of Baskervilles by Arthur Conan Doyle.
The Quiet American by Graham Greene.
Oh, is that an oxymoron? No.
Yes, I think it is an oxymoron, actually.
No, my stepfather's American. He's delightfully quiet.
The Reluctant Fundamentalist by Mohsin Hamid.
And The Talented Mr. Ripley by Patricia Highsmith. Yes. So,
and there'll be my book on there one year.
Crime and Conflict.
Crime and Conflict.
Is that
there?
The minutes from the writers' groups?
Carolyn will be happy to know there's 50% females, women writers here.
That's interesting we've finally got 50% female, but it's all crime and conflict.
But it's more than 50% in the world.
Rebecca, look, what a fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I love Daphne Du Maurier. And there was another one she wrote,
Regeneration by Pat Barker. Absolutely loved that.
Knew where I sit.
With that a couple of years ago. Siegfried Sassoon and Wilfred Owen, who are two of my favourite. I love Wilfred Owen, as does Carolyn, I know.
A fine poet.
Big Wilfred Owen fans. Mm. I have got Peter James Children of Men, but I haven't read it.
No, I was
Jamaican Inn.
Jamaica Inn.
Oh, yes,
love that book.
I was interested to know if anyone has read The Children of Men, because I've got a hold on it in large print.
Right.
Because it's pointless me borrowing anything in small print. I just can't manage it. You know, I've read a little bit about it, and it sounds fascinating.
I've seen the movie that's based on it, but I haven't read
it. Has anyone actually read The Children of Men?
No.
I read one review where, I read a number of reviews, but there was one where a woman said it really did change her life because she didn't want to have children. And after reading that book, it really made her think about things, and it actually made her feel there was a real importance in having children, and so now she wants to have children. And that's a major change in your life and in your outlook.
The Hound of the Baskervilles.
I've been trying to read that.
I loved it. It was so dark and kind of,
I'm using Project Gutenberg. And I looked at the cover, and I've been trying to think, what am I going to do for my Christmas cards? And I looked at the cover, and I'm like, oh, that's beautiful. That's what I'm doing for my Christmas cards.
Oh, what a great idea.
And so I haven't actually had time to read it because I've spent all this time photoshopping the design to get it to what I want it to be.
That's a very original excuse.
For our listeners, Project Gutenberg is books that you can actually download for free because they are out of copyright. And they're fantastic. There's
classics.
Tens of thousands of books. The beauty of it is they're preserving all these classics, which is really wonderful. I mean,
it's
B.O. Wolf and...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can read any of the original books.
Yeah, which is fantastic. So I've read The Hound of the Baskervilles, Rebecca, and that's about it.
I've read about three paragraphs of Hound of the Baskervilles. But yes, I do love
Rebecca. It's fun. Hound of the Baskervilles is
actually... The Malacan Fundamentals sounds interesting.
I really do enjoy Regeneration because it's about two of my favourite poets, and it's just, I love the setting and I love the story about them. It was,
I'll hunt up the Reluctant Fundamentalist.
The one that really interested me there was this Ice Candy Man, which has been renamed Cracking India, and it's set during partition. It's focused on a Parsi girl growing up and her relationship with her Aya, who's a Hindu. So I actually much prefer the title Cracking India to Ice Candy Man.
Yeah, that sounds like a drug book.
Candyman.
When I read that, it didn't interest me at all. But when I looked it up and found out that it's been retitled,
it sounds like one of those bad Google translations, doesn't it? You know, they type it in.
Doesn't it show the importance of a title?
Yes, very much so.
American Tabloid doesn't appeal to me at all. I've read a bit of James Earl Roy and his blokey and his this and his that.
Not into it. I love books with bizarre titles. It really appeals to me.
So The Reluctant Fundamentalist is an interesting title.
I like that.
Yeah. And that's written by a Pakistani author.
Okay.
And it's over the use of one day. Takes place during the course of a single evening in an outdoor Lahore cafe.
Wow.
Where a bearded Pakistani man talks to a nervous American stranger about his love affair with an American woman. So we'll move on. And writer's tip, Carolyn?
Use COVID. Because
not COVID itself. Lockdown to write. Yeah. If you have COVID, just recover.
Yeah. If you don't bemoan the lack of, you know, being able to go and shop, there's a chance you could actually sit down there and write. And this novel I'm writing, I've been wanting to write it for ages, and this just being in COVID times meant that I was, I could do it. And I've been sending words to my darling friend, and that's another one. Use your friends.
Yeah. No, I agree with you, Carolyn. That is a great writer's tip. Find a writing buddy. Find someone who goes, I want you to send me this amount of writing. It's almost like a bit of a homework thing.
It is, very much.
And, I think
and when
that's
you when we're sending 200 words and they say, no, send me 250, I want more.
Yeah.
Like, yes, she wants more. It's not rubbish. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful feeling.
Sometimes it does take knowing that someone else is going to read it and wanting it. And I think lockdown is a great opportunity for that because you also don't feel quite as guilty asking people to spend the time
because
on
everyone's
it.
Bored, so it's just something new to do.
Because
you've washed, you've cleaned everything in the house, it's all clean, there's no dust left. Some people, imaginary people, not me, not you.
Oh, phew.
Other people who aren't writers, I don't know. My mum, people like our mothers, perhaps.
Or our mother's mothers.
Yeah, my mother's mother.
Goes back a while.
My mum's much taller than I will ever be. The word of the day, thank you.
Word of the day. And I love this one. And this is not
you love them all.
Rude word. Crocker-wodger.
Wow. Crocker-wodger.
Maybe Marie should say that because she can pronounce it better than me.
I can't.
It sounds like a word you'd be scared to Google in case some unusual images came up.
Okay, it's a wooden puppet, a Victorian wooden puppet.
Oh, I hate puppets. They freak
Which me can out. Be, actually, I could have brought one along. I've got an example of one at home. Like a wooden puppet that has strings, that dances to strings. And it's actually used as slang for politicians.
Oh, like a marionette.
So I've got a wooden toy figure which can be pulled by a string, jerks its limbs about. It's used in the slang sense to signify a pseudo-politician, one whose strings are pulled by somebody
else. Gosh, gee, I don't know.
Who could that possibly
I thought Cal would like this one, so this is going to be Cal's new Twitter word.
This is a quacker-wodger.
Yeah. So that comes from John Cameron Houghton's Slang Dictionary of 1887. So we'll move on and readings of own works.
Okay, well, I'll get started because I actually brought a piece of writing with me.
So dry for a change.
Okay, it's a poem. It's true, more or less, true story. Oh, silly cat is the title. Limping cat, why were you here? Do you have a home somewhere near? You prowl around, I watch and think. Are you the cat Missy grabbed in a blink? A few years back, or longer maybe, in a yard where Missy could see. She barked, you ran, leapt up high, but fence too tall, high as the sky. You clung to fence, Missy's teeth held tight. Cat versus dog, Missy won the fight. Years ago now, but you're here again, and I play my game of remember when. It was a stupid cat, and I don't know, I couldn't see whether the cat had all of its feet or... And I don't know whether Missy actually chewed a foot off or what the story was, but it was on our front veranda. And I was watching out the window thinking, I know you, cat. I think I know you.
So can I go next? Because my PC is running low and it's just brought up a battery thing. So two things. I want to read two things. Yes. One thing is I want to talk about encouraging children when they're young to write poems.
Yep.
Because this week I found a poem that I wrote when I was about 9 and I sent it to Carolyn. But I'm actually going to read it as a bit of a giggle because I remember loving writing when I was little and I look back at it and think, this is so embarrassing. But everyone loved it and it really kept me going. So this was to my grandma, who we call Alma because we're Dutch. To an Alma who is sweet, not a nicer lady could we meet. A darling person who is a good cook and who also knits clothes to give us a good look. So to an Alma no one can beat. Happy Almas Day, tweet. So I roared with laughter before Twitter. I roared with laughter when I found that cleaning up my mum's place yesterday. But there was a whole pile of all these poems I'd written. And I remembered loving writing them. I remembered the joy with which they were received. How I was just considered the most fabulous. Nobody ever... corrected them or so encourage your kids to write. And then the piece I want to read today is a piece that I did some research into the house that I live in Gawler South, and the woman who lived in there before me, obviously this is quite fictitious, but what I had to do was take bits of what I knew and just make stuff up. So see how we go. That's anyway, so this is written from the point of view of Rose, who has died. The piece is written from the point of view of a ghost, I guess. Rose, the hibiscus couldn't be saved. That much was clear. And I watched as the young woman, Bella, hacked, cut and culled the branches, angrily throwing them onto the front lawn, cursing violently and muttering to herself. I am shocked but can't help but smile. I'd have never spoken like that in public. I didn't even know some of the words she was using. However, I'm glad I had the chance to meet her before I had to move out into the nursing home a few months ago. A move that I had no time or intention of getting used to before I decided that enough was enough and slipped away for good. 99 good years, so I have no complaints. I'm only surprised that somehow I've ended up back here at the house. The hibiscus stump is firmly tethered to the ground. Bella has placed a hose at its base, clearly deciding to flood it out as if it's some kind of hostage. May, the busybody across the road, scurries over, and I momentarily attempt to hide, until I realise that she can't see me. There are benefits to being dead after all. She loved that tree. She points an accusing finger at Bella. First, you throw her out of her house so she dies, and now you kill her tree. Leaning on the veranda post, Bella's smile could almost be considered friendly. Well, I too love this tree, and I'm quite sad it's dead. Rose was 99 years old, so she was probably on borrowed time anyway. So I reckon you can learn to play nice and bugger off, because unlike this tree stump, I intend staying here for quite a while. I laugh out loud at the look on May's face and stop when Bella suddenly spins her head in my direction. May runs back across the road, but I know from long experience she'll be back again and again. Bella attacks the tree with renewed vigour and a new sense of anger, and I see the sodden mass suddenly begin to shift ever so slightly until with a last heave the trunk cracks and snaps and Bella gives off a triumphant cry. She has done it. I am pleased. 40 years I've lived, mostly alone in this house. I planted the hibiscus the first year I was here. Clearly the tradition of housing feisty independent women looks set to continue.
Nice. That's lovely.
And very much our street. A few people I recognised in that story.
I was going to say, are we allowed to publish it?
Oh, yes. We just won't say what street it is.
Okay, here's a poem. I wrote, I wish I didn't have to. I wish I didn't have to part with 3/4 of my stuff. Minimalists think my house is packed with more than enough. I wish I didn't have to cut back to save lots of cash. My financial advisor states I buy way too much trash. I wish I didn't have to put salad, not pies, on my plate. My doctor keeps saying, count calories to lose some weight. I wish I didn't have to go to the gym and exercise, but my fitness coach tells me it's star jumps that lead to endorphin highs. Mm. And I was rereading that poem back a few months ago and thinking about not being able to go to the gym and aqua classes and stuff and thinking, oh dear, this I wish I didn't have to had come true.
Sometimes you think
it's your fault.
Yeah, I know. Be careful what you wish for.
Oh, yes. Well, I was going to read something out of one of my books and took a book with me today when I was at the pub with Justin, but I wrote this instead. So it's written on paper in my handwriting, so this is going to be an effort to read.
This is a class at all.
Don't think they'll help. They'll just see more of a mess. So, my first theft. It was night in spring. The snow had melted and we'd been living on the streets for about a year, living on scraps and begging. It was a cold night. Bethy was hungry. Her whining irritated me. Stay put and I'll find you something, I ordered, and left her huddled in an alcove in a dark alley, one of our standard hiding spots. I wandered the noisome alleys and grimy streets of the port in search of scraps, but all I found were other samples of discard humanity, as cold and hungry as myself. Though a child, I was already adept at avoiding notice, fading into shadows, slipping barefoot and noiseless past clumsy adults. There was a man, a drunkard, no rare sight in this area, his bulky body swaying, lurching. It was attempting to move without command. Hanging from his waist was a fat leather purse. It swayed back and forth as the body supporting it lurched and reeled. The contents rattled and clinked, gold, silver and copper. Chiming and ringing, I wanted that purse. Those coins were going to be mine. But mine were not the only eyes on that purse. They rustled in the dark corners. They did not operate alone, like me. And they were large, half boy, half man, clumsy, but brutal. They would knock him down, snatch the purse, leave him broken and bleeding in the back alley. Then the real violence would happen as they fought over the contents. There'd be no fighting between Bethy and I. She'd be happy with the leather bag holding a few pebbles to make a noise. The purse bobbed its way down Threadneedle Street. It rattled along Costermonger Abbey. It swayed left to right down along Skint Row. It stopped and started past the leatherworks and almost fell into the Port Canal, then turned into Loder Alley. It was then all miss out. I snuck past unnoticed, the purse swaying sans sensors. Then I turned and bolted back, knocking the body supporting the purse. It fell hard, hitting the cobbles. The purse lay on a mound of unresponsive flesh. Removing it proved harder than anticipated. I had no tools but my fingers. I had to find and untie the knot that bound it, by which time the mound was stirring. I touched his head, relieved that he still breathed. "Oh, mister, ever so sorry. You need to be careful. There are cut purses following you. You get out of this dark lane quick-like. Tain't safe. It tain't." He slobbered and mumbled, and I helped him to raise himself from the cobbles, set him on his feet, and watched as he staggered on down the lane, unaware of the absence of the purse, which melded with me into the shadows.
It's very exciting. I like that.
Mm. I was trying to play on the theme of crime.
Definitely crime there.
Yes. With that, we'll wrap up and we have a listener's challenge, which, Michelle, would you like to say what the listener's challenge is?
Oh, Art and Gawler.
Yes. So the listener's challenge is Art and Gawler. And if
anyone anything, wants to... there's lots of Art and Gawler.
There's a lot. Write something and send it into our website or the GBA website.
Yep.
And that's it for this month.
Thank you.
Thank you. See you next month. It'll be Christmas.
Yes.
Wow.
We'll have to do a Christmas-themed podcast.
We will.
Mm.